from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Are you considering travel to a poor country? And how do you know if your tourist dollars will support the local people or hurt them? Every year, Berkeley-based Ethical Traveler selects the 10 developing nations it thinks do the best job of promoting human rights, preserving the environment, and creating a community-based tourism industry. Ethical Traveler has just released this year's list. We'll discuss why Ethical Traveler believes people should head to these countries, and we'll look at the ethics of tourism. What considerations do you make when you choose where and how to travel, and how important should such considerations be? Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Travel is a huge industry. United States travelers spend nearly $80 billion a year. And how mindful are they, or how mindful are you, when you choose a place or places to travel to, or where your dollars go and who directly benefits from them? How much do you consider the political and human rights practices or the environmental practices of places you choose to travel to? Well, just yesterday, Ethical Traveler of Berkeley, an all-volunteer nonprofit project of Earth Island Institute, released its annual list of what it calls the world's best ethical destinations. And in fact, the report is called Best Destinations, the world's 10 most ethical destinations, of 2013. And they are focused on the developing world. And Ethical Traveler lists the top 10. We'll find out what they are in the course of this hour. And decides on the basis of promotion of human rights, preservation of environment, and places that create a community-based tourism economy where economic benefits accrue more to the people living within the nation. The organization reviews the policies and practices of hundreds of nations and also highlights what countries have to offer in the way of activities and sites to see and visit. And in this morning's opening forum hour, we want to find out what nations are on that list, 2013 list, and discuss the importance of ethical travel. Joining us in the studio is Jeff Greenwald. He's Executive Director of Ethical Travel. And again, let's define them. They're a socially conscious alliance of travelers, travel agencies, and travel outfitters. And he's also an author and monologist. His latest book is called Snake Lake. Welcome, Jeff Greenwald.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Also good to have co-author of the report, The World's 10 Most Ethical Destinations 2013, Christy Hoover, who is Chief Researcher for Ethical Traveler. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And also with us is Malia Everett. She's founder of Altru Vistas, which provides mid-sized loans to local communities to get involved in the tourism industry. She's formerly director of reality tours at Global Exchange and a board member of Ethical Traveler. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Glad to have you all here. And let's begin, Jeff Greenwald, with you. And let's find out. Well, actually, I want to hold off on this. We do it like the old rock and roll shows, the top 10. But these are not listed in any order, are they? I mean,
no, it's alphabetical. They're all the best.
Okay. They're all the best. Well, you're trying to have people support best practices and really getting them to visit these countries. And some of them are not necessarily countries that would be on the top of the list of many travelers. But this is very different from, let's say, well, ecotourism or those. It brings in a number of different factors. Yeah.
Yeah, it's more like a way you could almost see is like a profit sharing thing. Like, you know, everybody spends their money in Paris and Thailand and these various other destinations that people love to go. But here are 10 countries that are in the developing world. Many people haven't been to most of them, but these are places that are really stepping up for the well-being of the people in their country, the human rights, they're protecting their environments. And it's a powerful thing when travelers go to these countries because it really supports them financially. It gives them great reinforcement for continuing to do the right thing. And it shows their neighboring countries, hey, you know, we want a piece of that big travel tourism pie also. So we're gonna you know, take some of these steps as well.
How many people do you think you inspire to actually go to play? This list has been going on how many years now?
Since 2006.
And any way to gauge this?
Millions of people, I'm sure.
Well, that answers the question very, very deftly answered. There is actually a prodigious amount of research, I want to commend you, that goes into looking at all these criteria that we touched on and also giving people an idea. You know, you can surf here, you can see these kind of beautiful sites and everything. So it's really a first-rate travel guide, like, say, Lonely Planet is or some of these books that are out there. But what sources do you go to, Christy?
Well, we're using information from the World Bank, the United Nations, Transparency International, Freedom House, State Department, Yale. We have just hundreds of sources that we go through every year.
All right. So rather than hold people in suspense here much longer, let me look down the list here. And they are, as you said, alphabetical. We start with Barbados. And then Cape Verde. I thought Cape Verde. We all did for years. Cape Verde, excuse me. I've been saying for years. It is Cape Verde. And then we get Costa Rica, happiest place in the world, according to the happiness index, right? Ghana, Latvia, Lithuania, Mauritius, Palau, excuse me. Samoa and Uruguay. And again, places that don't necessarily fall on most travelers' lists. So let's talk about what makes these places, just on the environmental level, Latvia, Lithuania, and Uruguay get checks off. Malia, why?
Yeah. Just again, the amount of research that went into it, looking at different various factors, whether it's resource conservation practices, what they're trying to do to reduce their emissions. And also, really importantly, some of these nation states, including Palau and Samoa, they've actually been able to implement some wonderful programs to actually tax to use an airport tax. So when people are arriving into the country, they collect money that is actually being used to fund amazing conservation projects around the world. And these kinds of models, of course, can be reproduced and implemented in other states to, again, benefit the incredible biodiversity and resource conservation efforts of many countries.
Chris, it may be good for the social conscience to go to some of these places, Christy, but they wouldn't, again, necessarily be some of them high on people's lists, but you're really urging them to go for more reasons, I guess, aren't you?
Yes, it's a good opportunity to contribute to the local economy and give back to sort of cultural programs that they have in place and sustainable tourism programs that they have in place. And you can go a lot of different places if you want to go scuba diving, but we encourage people to sort of think a little bit beyond just sort of the typical places and go somewhere where you can make a positive impact.
You've got five island states here and got places that are formerly in the USSR. I mean, it's a rather you've got a wide range here, Jeff. I mean, you're kind of covering the planet.
Yeah.
Most continents, I think.
It's funny, isn't it, the way like half of the winners of this year's list are island nations. And I think that really speaks to how, you know, islands are sort of feeling the heat, literally, in terms of global climate change more than a lot of other countries. And they're, in a way, forced to step up. But what we found with a lot of these island nations is they also have a rich cultural tradition of unity between the people's spiritual lives and the land and the water. So they're very inclined just by their nature in a lot of cases, say in Palau or Samoa, to really care about that. And what Christy just said a second ago about, you know, there's lots of places to scuba dive. People go to Thailand all the time. They go to Mexico. What's wonderful about the places on this list is that when you do have that personal relationship with the reef or with the water, you're not going to build those huge hotels. You're not going to bring in the big cruise ships that tear up the reef. So you'll actually have better scuba diving in a place like Palau or Barbados than you conceivably would have in, you know, some of the off islands in Thailand. Much better diving, I think.
And some of the, Christy, some of the places that were on last year have fallen off. We mentioned the top 10 here, but alphabetically, but you've got places that were on the list, but no longer on in terms of the criteria here, and some of them pretty well-known places like Chile and Argentina, Serbia, fell off the list. How is that decided?
Well, we look at each country from scratch every year. We don't weight it more heavily just because it was on a list the prior year. So we go through all of the indices again for each country, and a lot of the countries we saw trending negatively this year. For example, you mentioned Chile. The human rights record there has really gone downhill, and we were unhappy to see incidents of police violence, potentially damaging dam projects in Patagonia. And other countries had things like this as well, where we felt instead of having them on the 2012 list, encouraging them towards even more positive sustainable development, it actually has gone downhill, unfortunately. So we hope to see them again on the list, but
Are you happy to hear from these countries? Why we were off the list or that sort of thing?
I think in years past, occasionally we've gotten feedback, but thus far.
One thing we hear a lot from people in the countries is, why is our country on the list? I remember when 1 year we put Bulgaria on the list and we got all these emails saying, do you know anything about Bulgaria? You don't want this place on your ethical list.
I mean, people, citizens of the country.
They did. Yeah. And in fact, they were right.
Really? You mean Bulgaria was a mistake?
It was. We had our research. Things had changed there very quickly after we released our report several years ago. And we
with civil liberties and political rights?
Yeah, and corruption. Yeah. And we had to backtrack a bit and
well,
just say.
Not to say that all these places are utopias either. I mean, you know, you've got some places here that still have some serious problems. I mean, in terms of their own policing and sexual abuse and domestic abuse and all of those kinds of things. But the fact of the matter is that I know, as I said before, a lot of work went into this. When you're talking about, for example, human rights, political rights and civil liberties, you've got Uruguay, Costa Rica and Cape Verde really right up on top by most of the metrics that one would decide about this. Malia, when people are thinking about traveling, you have some notions that they ought to really think ahead of time about asking questions along the lines of what we're talking about here, but also, you know, who owns what about the tour guide place, who's getting the profits, these kinds of things, which aren't necessarily taken into consideration.
Absolutely. And that's why it's been such an honor for me to be a part of the Ethical Traveler family for so many years, because ethical travel is both the intention and the meaning behind travel and the kinds of things that we're trying to do and learn and, you know, why we're traveling around the world or even in our own communities and backyards. But ethical travel fundamentally in terms of sustainable or socially responsible travel needs to look at where the money goes and whether you're, you know, booking a group tour someplace or doing individual travel. It's really important to ask, you know, who owns that lodge or that hotel? Are you employing local guides to set it up? The same kind of thing with transportation providers. Unfortunately and fortunately, tourism is a huge opportunity. We're looking at the fact that there's, oh my gosh, in 2012, we're expected to have over 1 billion arrivals. And the fact of the matter is, we're also looked at the fact that in 2011, we have international tourism receipts that exceeded $1 trillion for the first time. So tourism is big business, and it's a tremendous opportunity for communities around the world and for nation states to really invest in tourism and tourism infrastructure. However, you know, we talk about, and I talk about a lot, capital flight in terms of where the money goes on these major tourism projects around the world. So we have what's called leakage. Basically, you know, industrial, you know, communities or big hotels or multinational corporations can invest and create these big hotels that Jeff was just mentioning, you know, eco lodges and things like that. It's very rare for local communities actually to have those kind of capital resources and build their own lodges and scuba facilities and things like that. So it's really important to think about where you put your money, because we can, like last night's presentation was called the Commonwealth Vote with Our Wings. You know, we can put our money where our values really are.
You unveiled the top 10 at the Commonwealth Club last night. Now we're getting sort of an exclusive here this morning. I mean, it was just decided upon.
Very
or I mean, opened up.
But
also, when you talk about travel and ethical travel, there's so many things that come to mind here. I mean, there's a lot of slum travel now. There are a lot of tours that are promoted. They go through the slums of Rio, for example, and into India. And, you know, on the one hand, you can look at this as sort of like exploitative and, you know, looking at people like we go into a zoo or something. On the other hand, you can say, well, it can enrich their economies. It can make people aware of how terrible the penury is, and they may want to, you know, contribute money. How do you think about it? Is this ethical travel, or how does one decide along these lines? Some thoughts on this from Jeff?
Yeah, it's one of those things that you can make sweeping statements, and I think the basic thing you want to look at is, where's the money going? Is the money going into the pockets of some promoters, you know, who are then enriching themselves at the cost of the people in these unfortunate circumstances, or is this a way to bring money into that community?
Well, sometimes it's both, though.
Help them get schools. Sometimes it is both. And when you're looking at an ambiguous situation like that, and so many situations are ambiguous in this crazy world, I think what you have to look to ultimately is your own intention. What's your purpose for going? Are you, you know, and if you have enough mindfulness to actually look at that, I guess you're all right. But, you know, if you're just going to snap pictures of people you saw in Slumdog Millionaire, you know, you really might want to rethink your motivation. But if you're thinking, God, I've heard about these kinds of communities all over the world. I've never seen them. I know I don't have really the courage to go by myself into one of these places, but I really want to see how these people live and really get a picture of it that'll, you know, help me decide what to do with my own, you know, money Well,
sometimes they'll say, we're going to take you to see where all the drugs are, and mm-hmm. you know, have to pay off the drug lord so that they go in there and have safety in that particular area and so forth. I mean, a lot of these are webs, really, that are very difficult to get to the bottom of, but that's a whole institution in itself. And I'm wondering also, Malia, we've highlighted the top 10 from Ethical Travel, but your organization has been sending people to Burma and Cuba, and certainly there have been tremendous strides in Burma. I mean, Aung San Suu Kyi said, please come visit, and Obama was there, President Obama, and so forth. But the human rights violations are still pretty terrible in Burma, Myanmar, and they're still pretty terrible in Cuba, too. So what's the reasoning there?
Definitely. I just want to say, even in terms of the list, you know, we always dance with contradictions. In any country that we go to, whether, you know, we're looking at prison rights or discrimination of gays or people with disabilities, et cetera. And so when we are looking at countries that both the United States may have had historically strained relationships, like in a place with like Cuba, or and or both of those two countries, Myanmar and Cuba, both have gone through some pretty radical economic and political changes, or i.e. liberalization, over the last few years. And so I think it's really important for us to see ourselves when we travel as necessary ambassadors, accidental, you know, citizen diplomats. We are traveling representing, you know, our country and engaging in these people-to-people dialogues. And that's where that experience of traveling to different cultures can be part of a process of building peace.
So there are certain places where you go as a citizen diplomat and almost have to hide your Americanism. I mean, there are plenty of people who travel in places like Pakistan, Afghanistan, mm-hmm. and they say, I'm Canadian, because they know if they say they're American, it just opens them up to all kinds of things.
And we've actually done, I mean, my old job at Reality Tours and Global Exchange, you know, we set up a lot of programs for people to go to Afghanistan and Iran and Cuba and other places mm-hmm. where we fundamentally set up the program around getting closer to the people. And, you know, you were mentioning the sense of kind of some of the voyeurism of going into really poor areas or areas that have been devastated by example, you know, for a big maquiladora or something like that that's left devastation ecologically and socially in its wake. But for us to be able to go there and meet with the communities, to be invited by them, to hear their story. I think that's one of the things that I really want to highlight in all of the programs that we're involved with, because it's so important for communities to hear what people are doing on their own terms and to hear their agency, their everyday heroism, what their aspirations are from their future, and to hear what their struggles are as well.
Well, it's also important for us to hear what our listeners have to say. And let me take this opportunity to invite those of you listening to join us by phone. And you can do that whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Real question is, do you take in mind, or are you mindful? That's a key word that's often used in this context of ethical travel. And what does ethical travel mean to you? And when you hear a list like the one, and I'll refresh your memory here, I'll go backwards, Uruguay, Samoa, Palau. I'm sorry. I keep wanting to make it my pal here. Lithuania, Latvia, Ghana, Costa Rica, Cape Verde, and Barbados. Do these places entice you? Do you think about maybe more conventional places? What do you think of when you want to spend your money? And do you actually think socially conscious about where your dollars are going? Let me give out the phone number. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your call, so feel free to call us now. Again, toll free, 866-733-6786. And a number of other ways to register your thoughts about ethical travel this hour. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post your thoughts on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page, and you can also tweet us. And the Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And Jeff Greenwald, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to say about traveling as American and being a citizen diplomat that way. You know, a lot of people in different countries have really mixed feelings about America, but almost everyone loves Americans as travelers. It's like you'll go into a place like Pakistan or Iran, places where Malia and I both traveled, and they'll go, oh, you're from America, where? And I'll go, San Francisco. Oh, I love San Francisco. You're an American, where are you from? Chicago. Oh, I have a cousin in Chicago. It's like they know they don't like America, but every part of America they love. So I love telling people I'm from America. It really opens them up, because almost everyone in the world has some friend or relation that lives somewhere in the United States, and you immediately have something in common with them, strange as it may seem. So I never hide the fact that I'm American.
I know travelers who do, though. I mean, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you're aware of that, in certain parts of the world where they just feel very uncomfortable saying I'm an American because they feel there's so much enmity against the United States. And they say they're Canadian, for example, or they say they're from a European country. And it's been going – you know, the interesting thing is it was – I mean, places like Yemen, for example, you know, as opposed to, say, Vietnam, where they should really hate our guts, you know, but they want us – they want tourism so desperately.
Cuba as well, yeah.
Well, Cuba should – has reason for enmity, too, to be sure. Well, let's find out what our listeners have to say. And by the way, you can see this list by simply going to our website, which is kqed.org, and you can post any comments you have there in this whole subject of ethical travel, kqed.org/forum, and we go to your calls. We begin, Sam, with you. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just returned from Bhutan, and I had a fabulous time, and I really enjoyed it, and I thought the architecture was beautiful, and it's a small country. There's only 750,000 people, but they seem to be doing very well economically, and I didn't see much poverty. And so, anyway, I just love Bhutan.
Well, thank you for that. Bhutan used to be a little more difficult to get into than it is these days, but has it been on the list?
No, Bhutan hasn't been on the list, despite its incredible environmental record and its beautiful architecture and amazing Buddhist culture. There have been ongoing human rights issues with what they call the Southern Bhutanese, the Nepalese of Bhutanese descent. There's been a lot of persecution, and they're really second-class citizens in the country. There are huge refugee camps just outside the Bhutanese border where hundreds of thousands of them have literally grown up from the time they were babies. Until those problems are addressed, we can't really include Bhutan on the list, despite all its really wonderful environmental policies.
So if anybody in a high level or upper hierarchy in Bhutan is listening, I hope you get that message, and we'll go to another caller here, and that's Chuck. Chuck, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to share, I've been doing, in my own sense, ethical traveling all my life. Pretty much it is something that I could not wear off from. My criteria is I do not go to occupied places. So, for example, Hawaii or Israel, those places I will not go no matter what.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry, Hawaii is occupied? I thought it was one of the states of the USA. Well, who's occupying Hawaii?
Of course, Hawaii is occupied by the United States for no other reason than the sugar company trying to sell their sugar, just SMH. So Hawaii is occupied.
I don't know that I would call that occupation, but please proceed. I'm sorry.
And also Israel is pretty much just like South Africa, you know, the colonial occupation. So those places I will not go and I will not contribute, especially Hawaii. I do not believe that the local people, the indigenous people, are actually benefiting from the occupational. And also, of course, there's the American military, which is playing the same role as they play in the Marshall Islands, destroying the nature and so on.
Well, thank you, Chuck. It's good to hear from you. I think President Obama, people think he's from Kenya originally, but maybe he's from another occupied, different occupied country. Hawaii is occupied. Yeah, you were going to say something here, Malia Everett?
Yeah, I would love to just chime in on that. I'm actually from Oahu as well, from Hawaii, and I wanted to thank him really for thinking about the Kanaka, because in terms of framing this conversation for tourism, I think Hawaii provides a great example. I mean, it is a place that was occupied that later became a state, and the fundamental fact is for years, some of the sovereignty movements said, don't come to Hawaii. You know, we need to find out ways to have tourism, which is huge in Hawaii, really benefit the indigenous communities, the Kanaka there as well. So the same kinds of things I would say to be an ethical traveler, you know, ask around, visit, learn about the traditional culture, try to have your money really benefit some of those projects and things like that as well.
Well, we'll find out what you, our listeners, have to say on this score. Some more we're talking about traveling, well, to poor countries, really. And what do you think about it? How do you think you should spend your tourist dollars, your valuable hard-earned dollars? When we return with Malia Everett, Christy Hoover, Jeff Greenwald, and you on Forum, I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Jeff Greenwald was asking me, who does the music? It's really nice. And Malia Everett is actually dancing and making sinuous movements here, listening to that music. It's Mike Marshall. And let's give him his props. Well-deserved. The music for Forum, which a lot of people love, and a lot of people say, why don't you get new music? Because they're can't make everybody happy, but those are in the minority. Probably in the minority also are the kind of people who might be listening here and saying, I don't want people to tell me politically what's correct for me, where to travel, and, you know, I should be able to decide on my own. I like the people in a certain country, and I like to go there, and I like what it has to offer. Why should I feel guilty if it's not on the list of the 10 developing countries or whatever? I want to go to Bulgaria. You know, you can hear somebody almost saying that. And why shouldn't I go to Bulgaria? What do you say to people who think like that or talk like that?
Well, the whole point of this report is, you know, it's not a stick, it's a carrot. We're not telling people where not to go. We're just saying, here's 10 great places. They might not be on your travel list, but if you feel like supporting countries that are really doing great things for the environment and human rights, these countries could really use your tourist dollars, and you will be amazed and surprised by how beautiful and wonderful they are.
But when you say, for example, Chile and Argentina and Serbia have fallen off, it gives people maybe a little pause who might be thinking that's a good place to go.
And, well, they should pause, you know, and they should look and see what's going on in Chile and Argentina and some of these countries and decide, they're beating up their college students. Maybe I won't go there this year.
Yeah. And Malia, here's a listener, Michael, who says, how do you find out where and to whom your tourist money is going? I'd prefer that the money stay local as much as possible, be well distributed, but how do you know about this?
Thank you. You ask. You ask. You spend the little extra bit of time to do the due diligence. I mean, I even, when I'm planning my trips every summer with my children, just independently around the world, I do that research. I email, like, who owns your little bed and breakfast or who owns your facility? And I just ask. And there's different ways of making my own criteria. Ideally, it's locally owned. Second is if, you know, we're putting a trip together, maybe they want a four-star hotel. So we look for a national chain. Again, something that's going to reside, or more of the money will reside in the national economy. And other times, you may have a joint venture where part of the money is residing in the local community. Part of it's going back to, you know, Amsterdam or London. But fundamentally, they also have practices around building capacity for local communities. So take the time to ask the questions. Just don't book online and try to get the cheapest package possible, because we know when you book online, 70% to 90%. So 70 to 90 cents out of every dollar is capital flight. It is not staying in the local economy to benefit the local community or the national economy.
Chris, there's a certain danger sometimes when you're someplace and asking actually the citizens. I was in Spain over the summer, and my Spanish is pretty decent, and I got in conversations with almost every cab driver and people on the street, and so many of them were saying, we wish Franco was back here because we have problems in this country now. And I was horrified, but you know, this is what I was hearing all over Spain.
I had the same thing this summer all through the Balkans with Tito. Yeah. It was a lot of ways.
There was order with Tito. There wasn't drugs. There wasn't violence on the street. You get that. Let me go to more calls here. And Claire, join us.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for the show and the work that your guests do. It's wonderful. I have a question. I've been interested in traveling to Indonesia, but I have no idea what their ethical record is, and I wonder if you guys happen to know.
Indonesia is a huge country. There's so many different worlds in Indonesia. I think it's a fascinating, wonderful, amazing place to visit. I know that they're all over the map in terms of, you know, ethical. There's a lot of wonderful things happening. There's a lot of horrible things happening, as it would with any country that has so big a population. Specifically, Malia, Christie, do either of you have any? Indonesia's never made our list because it's a developed country, not a developing country.
Well, it was under despotism for years under Suharto and Sukarno and all those guys. But recently, lower profile, really.
Yeah.
In terms of political abuses and human rights abuses.
Much lower profile. And I mean, the difference between some place like, for instance, Bali or Lombok or Java, the every island has a really different sense of governance and a different ambiance. I think that it's a wonderful place to visit. I would really recommend.
I said Sukarno, and I meant Sukarno, by the way. There was a little flip that went in my head there.
Malia, you've been there.
Yeah, Malia?
Yeah, I'm the same. The diversity is incredible and huge. And, of course, there is this legacy in history. And I'm not exactly sure in terms of how things are going socioeconomically and how different, you know, kind of political parties there benefit certain communities and not others. My major concern really is around just the incredible deforestation. There's a lot of Japanese and as well as Chinese companies that are in there basically use so much of this amazing pristine forest for paper and pulp.
We're right on point here, I think, with the next caller. Suresh, you were going to talk about deforestation. Join us.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. I was specifically interested in, when you came up with this list, environment was included. And there's a lot of deforestation in countries like Brazil and Southeast Asia, how is it best influencing either at the political level or the local level to contain this large amount of deforestation, and which really affects local people significantly, and the money is being made by big companies? What is being done there?
Well, it's a broad question. Who would like to address it? Maybe
more specifically.
You're going to say something here, Christy Hoover.
Well, we definitely have looked at natural resource management as a major criteria every year that we've done the list, and we do take deforestation very seriously. It's definitely been a disqualifying factor for various countries, I think in Latin America, for example. And you do see instances where this rampant deforestation will actually relocate entire indigenous villages just to make room for a pulp factory or a dam or what have you. So we do look at that. I don't know what influence that has had on those countries, but we've mentioned it in the past in our report.
You mentioned in this new report, in fact, a couple of countries that made the list that are still involved in deforestation.
Still a factor, yes.
Well, I thank you for the call, and I want to go to some more of your emails here. And by the way, you can join us by phone at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. We're talking about ethical travel with Christy Hoover, who is co-author of The World's 10 Most Ethical Destinations 2013. That is Destinations in the Developing World, and her co-author, Jeff Greenwald, is here as well. He's executive director of Ethical Traveler. And Malia Everett's here in studio with us, founder of Ultra Vistas, which provides mid-sized loans to local communities to get involved in the tourism industry. Where are you giving loans, by the way?
Actually, we just started the foundation and Ultra Vistas last week. I actually left Global Exchange after 16 years about a week ago, and I'm getting up and running. But hopefully identified communities will be in Cambodia, Peru, Ecuador, and hopefully even in Hawaii.
Let me go to an email here from Craig, who says, whenever I see tourist hotels on beaches like in the Caribbean, Mexico, even in Hawaii or Venice, I never see any sewage treatment plants nearby. Is it a bad idea to stay at a place where your sewage is probably going to be dumped into the ocean untreated? And should you ask before you book?
It's kind of answers his own question.
He does. Yeah. Ask before
it's
you like, dive.
It's like handing you guys, you know, a feast here. I mean,
yeah, you don't want to have that scratch and sniff.
Yeah. Where's a good ethical beach to learn surfing? Another listener asks on our website.
Oh, wow. Well, our list just came up with Uruguay on the Atlantic Ocean. Definitely Uruguay, has some great surfing places
Palau,
in Barbados.
Palau. These are all, at least four or five of the places on our list would be terrific places. Yeah. What was that great surfing place that had the best surfing in the Caribbean? Is Barbados.
Yeah.
That's
yes.
What they
first
do.
On the list because of alphabetized, like
it's,
I said.
Yeah, it's ordered by alphabetical. It's not 1 through 10. But, you know, Barbados is meant to have some of a place called the Soup Bowl near Bathsheba on the East Coast. It's supposed to have the best, most challenging surf in all of the Caribbean. You can go learn there if you're nice and self-confident. I don't know if I would try it, but
and they've got great rum if you weren't too self-confident.
That's in the report too, by the way. I noticed the rum was mentioned. What are you trying to do? Get us all here's Kate, who writes, I really appreciate the work your guests are doing. I wonder what thoughts they have on destinations that are more, well, family friendly. Now that we have a 3-year-old, we travel differently, less likely to venture too far off the beaten path, and frankly, seeking conveniences that we previously didn't care about. We're currently planning a trip to see our family in Hawaii next month, occupied Hawaii, and we'll spend some time on Maui before heading to the Big Island. Any thoughts on ethical lodging tourism on Maui? Do your guests recommend things like VRBO and B&Bs over large, medium-sized resorts? VRBO is vacation rental by owners, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. That's a part of the ask and be an informed traveler. Spend a little bit more time just engaging them. Fill out, you know, how long they've been in business and if they're local. Yeah, that's a wonderful thing to do. I think in terms just of chiming in on families, I've been, you know, I have an 11 and 12-year-old, and I started traveling with them when they were 6 months old, and they've been to 12 countries. And I'm often just so incredibly surprised at the generosity of spirit of people when I'm traveling to Honduras and Nicaragua or Peru. Like, people, you know, give you deals and really are just so incredibly hospitable when they know that you're traveling with your children. And you can ask for special deals and rates as well. Sometimes people will bring in a cot for free and do other things for you and give little regalitos, little, you know, toys and things like that. So I say, you know, just always engage them. Like, take a few dollars and call people on the phone and ask what kinds of things that they recommend for a family visiting, especially a family with little ones, because you need some kinetic activities, of course, to really engage the youngsters. But you also do need the, you know, safe food and safe water and clean water and those basic things to ensure the safety of your family.
That's all good advice. I'm wondering also, you know, I've done shows with women who have written books on traveling just as a woman alone or with other women and so forth. And there are places that are far more amenable and far easier. I mean, you know, some women have to go and put on a couple of marriage rings to they're single women, but they don't want to be accosted or don't want to be hit on or whatever. And some places are just much warmer and easier for women to travel. What comes to mind?
Jeff?
We're looking at the one man in the room here.
You're looking at him. Yeah. I don't find it an issue, actually. It could just be a matter of experience. If you're a less experienced traveler, maybe you're a little more intimidated by that. But I've traveled in the Middle East alone, for example, and I've never run into an issue. It's been quite the opposite, that people are actually very kind and very helpful and are more likely to surprise you.
We used to go to Italy. Women would go to Italy and get pinched. That doesn't happen anymore. I think they finally become enlightened in Italy.
I've never had anything like that happen.
Jeff, here's Charles who wants to know, why is Estonia not on the list as opposed to the other Baltic states, Latvia and Lithuania?
Oh, that's such a – I'm so happy to answer that question. Estonia and Poland and Croatia all fell off the list because they became developed countries.
Congratulations.
And we're hoping that some more of these countries on our list will follow that path. You
know. We'll also go to more callers. And Aaron, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Basically, I just took a trip when I was 21. I got back in April down through Central and South America. And I went before with the notion that people don't like Americans. So I asked a friend, what should I say? Should I say I'm Canadian or what? And they're like, yeah, sure. But then I asked an older friend, a more experienced traveler, what should I do? And they said, you should be the ambassador, the one that tells other people, you know, yes, I'm from America and we're not like you think we are. You know, let them see through our actions how Americans actually are.
That's a good thought.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Great.
I think everybody approves here, Aaron. And thank you for calling. And we'll go right to another caller. And that's you, Patty. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having this show. It's great. My question is about Lithuania. I traveled there in 2004, and I saw it as a country of contrast. I'm really interested in finding why you put them in your list. I was warned in Vilnius, for example, to stay out of certain areas, and was really shocked at how the downtown area has very, very expensive stores, and then there's really impoverished areas. And then if you go out to the countryside, I went over to Palanga, but went through the country and just saw so much. I was like going back 100 years. People were using plows. So I'm very, very interested in why Lithuania is on your list, and I'll take my answer on there. Thank you.
All right, and thank you. I add something to that. Lithuania, I don't know how many of you know Wendy Wasserstein's play, The Sisters Rosenzweig, Pulitzer Prize-winning, I think, play, a big hit on Broadway, but there's this whole thing about the Lithuanian liberation movement in the play, and there has been, you know, I mean, Lithuania broke off from the USSR, but in Lithuania itself, there's been a kind of independence movement, and people who feel they're oppressed by dint of, the present government. Christy, you were going to respond here?
Yes. Actually, Lithuania had a lot of selling points that made it a no-brainer for this year's list. For example, they are ahead of Latvia, Poland, Russia, and Ukraine in terms of in business environment and opportunities. They have a lot of environmental proactivity. They're very conscious of water quality, for example. They have a lot of new water protection measures in the Neman River Basin. There's a city in Lithuania called Kaunas. It's entered as a candidate for the European Green Capital of 2015. Based on things like climate change measures they're taking, energy performance, sustainable local transport, water consumption, waste management. you know, eco-innovation. It's a strong culture of environmental protection and cultural preservation as well. They actually go to a great extent to preserve their historical structures and cultural programs in some of the historical centers in the older cities in various parts of Lithuania. They have a really strong culture in all the three areas that we consider for our report.
Well, let me get another caller on here, and that's you, Andrea. Good morning.
Yes, hi. I wanted to say that the reason I've never visited any of those Baltic countries was because they were so anti-Semitic during, you know, all the all the many years. And they had pogroms, I think, and I would never go to any of them, Poland or Latvia or Lithuania or Estonia or, anyway, was my thought.
would you go to Germany?
No.
Just asking.
I actually brought a religious group to the former Balkans this summer. From Princeton University, and we were traveling to Croatia and Serbia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, as well as Slovenia. And we actually were really engaged with both Christian, you know, whether it's the Orthodox Church, the Roman Catholic, as well as Muslim and as different Islamic centers. And also in every single new nation state, we also visited with the various Jewish populations and groups. And some of them are very, very small but thriving, and others are very large. And so I think you could reach out. You could, you know, investigate where these different contacts and groups are and really engage in a proactive way. And they'd probably love to see you and love to have your support.
Well, we thank you for calling, Andrea, and we'll get another caller on. And that's you, Allison.
Hi.
Hi. So my husband and I spent a year traveling around the world, and we heard this dialogue a lot with other travelers. And I guess what always frustrates me about it is, you know, folks pat themselves on the back by not traveling somewhere, and then they never think about that country again. We did travel to some of these places, like Burma specifically, and, you know, we were intentional about spending our money not with the government, but as a result, we really continued to think about the plight of the people and learn their stories. And I just think it needs to be flipped on its head, because if folks don't go to these countries that are facing challenges, they're not going to do anything about it after the fact of deciding not to travel there.
Well, that's a good point, and thank you, Alice. I remember when Amy Tan went to Burma before she wrote a novel about it, Saving Fish from Drowning. She said, and this is before the changes that we've noted started taking place and things opened up somewhat, she said, well, Aung San Suu Kyi said people should travel here because people in the country need the money, and they will get some of it. And also, I'm a writer, so those were her two criteria. But you can understand how people might think, well, this country needs the money, and it needs whatever money is going to go into the country. And so should it be eliminated? Should it be disqualified because of all the other things, Jeff?
Well, I think that was Allison who just called.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, her whole point about you don't really know a place until you visit it either. It's like people love to read newspaper headlines and talk about these countries if they know something about them. Aldous Huxley said that to travel is to discover that everybody is wrong about other countries. And it's really true. You know, I think you've traveled a great deal, Michael. I know that, you know, Malia and Christy have too. You know, I talked about Israel most of my life. I talked about Cuba a great deal, Burma. I didn't know anything about these places till I visited them. I feel embarrassed by the things I said before I had the experience of talking with the people, of seeing the different sides of every issue, of actually walking down the streets, having coffee at the cafes there. I think, you know, again, another quote Muhammad said, don't tell me how educated you are. Tell me how much you've traveled. I think to understand the world and the people in it, you have to travel. You can't just look at the newspapers or take other people's intelligence, you know.
You don't know until you travel in the other shoes. By the way, I just recently learned the derivation. It goes back to Native American kind of aphorism. It's that ancient in its way. Mm-hmm. You know, traveling in somebody's moccasins, I guess. Here's Leo who tweets, could your guests expand a bit on what there is to do at these top ethical travel countries with respect to food and sightseeing and...
Can't go through all 10.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, just even just talking about Lithuania, you know, your World Heritage Sites, you know, if you're interested in culture and history and architecture, to farming and fishing in Latvia and Lithuania, to incredible, you know, hiking and horseback riding, again, fishing and scuba. So many ecotourism events, too, in terms of some of the island nations that we're talking about.
Well, you go to your website and find most of this, right? Let's give it.
Yeah. The website, ethicaltraveler.org.
And there's a link on our site, kqed.org. And here's some more emails. E from Mountain View writes, my family made Belize our vacation destination because we thought they could use our business more than other Caribbean countries. We learned a lot about the cultures of Belize, the rainforest, coral reefs, and taught our children something about the world and the obligations of those who have more to those who have less. We also went to New Orleans 3 weeks after the oil spill when their economy was suffering from people canceling vacations. We also spent time in Mississippi and learned about slavery in the United States. On both trips, we had a great time, learned a lot, and spent less than if we had gone to resort destinations. Now, there's an interesting argument, you know, when you think about all the suffering from Sandy or from
Katrina,
maybe dollars should be spent here domestically. So the argument would go.
Yeah,
you're all nodding your heads. Okay. Yeah.
It's a good argument.
Yeah.
We have consensus. Ethical travel doesn't mean beyond the borders. Marianne from Larkspur says, can the guests comment on the idea of nonprofit hotels that support a community in need? I just donated to Key Light Learning, which is building a boutique hotel and school in Kep, Cambodia, that will give at-risk orphans and young adults training in English and other hospitality industry skills so they can get jobs in the country's rapidly expanding tourism industry. That's one way the traveler can be sure that the money they spend goes to a good cause.
Absolutely. And there are many of those types of projects. I actually think Cambodia and Thailand both are way ahead in so many cases of providing these kinds of vocational and, you know, entrepreneurial opportunities for people in the tourism industry. We've dealt a lot with sex trafficking and sex tourism and people coming out of, you know, this incredible hardship. And the fact of the matter is there's organizations out there that are providing, you know, not only safety and training and healthcare, but new opportunities for them to take care of themselves and their families in the future.
Another listener says, I applaud, this is Chris in Mountain View, I applaud the efforts of your guests, but as an anthropologist, I'm not entirely convinced. Many sustainable tourism projects are imposed on local communities by NGOs and governments. NGOs and governments will say that the communities are involved and may demonstrate an increase in income for local peoples, but a few tourist dollars can come at the expense of growing or hunting food so the tourists can come see animals and people struggle to actually feed themselves. Furthermore, non-Western peoples are often asked to play out old stereotypes and package their traditional culture for the consumption of Western tourists.
Yeah.
There's a broad spectrum. Again, I think a lot of the places I've been, like recently went to Guyana in South America, and USAID and the Canadian Development Corps are all there, and they're really working with the Amerindian tribes to ask them, what would you like to do? You know, here's some ideas of how you could leverage the tourism economy. But there are places that are more exploitive. I think in Vietnam also they've found people who used to poach the animals, the monkeys in the forest, and turn them into wardens to protect the monkeys and explained why it's important. And a lot of these guys really, they get it, and they become passionate defenders of the wildlife. I think it's very hard to generalize about this, but maybe Malia, maybe you can generalize.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say, you know, we live in a globalized culture, and with more and more tourists, there is a commodification of culture, and sadly a commodification of also the sacred in terms of its cultural forms and things like that. So that is true, and it does happen. And at times, you know, other groups come in well-intentioned, but don't really work with the community from the very beginning. And so having, again, you know, knowing who owns the property and is it directed, is it run, is it truly benefiting the local community is really important. And so just like we look and define and critique development in any other terms, we need to look critically at you know, development and tourism because there are those worst practices. But then there are these best practices, which are incredible.
Well, by the way, you're getting a number of questions. Sorry. I'm sorry, Jeff, you were going to say.
I just want to say really quickly that when you watch traditional dance or look at all these traditional sculptures going to places like, you know, Nepal or Easter Island, Rapa Nui,
yeah,
that's keeping those traditions alive in, yes, a lot of these places. And you've got to realize that they wouldn't exist if not for that travel and tourism economy at this point.
A number of people, absolutely, are asking if you would apply the same evaluative criteria to the United States. Is the U.S. an ethical place to travel? I mean, you're all nodding your head when we talked about Katrina and Sandy and so forth. We get into some real political questions here. I don't know if anybody wants to venture, but let's get another caller on here. We're not trying to divert this, but there was a sort of silence there. Claudia, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. When you talk about boycotting a country, I think it won't make a particle of difference unless the people know why you're boycotting. And so just recently I heard on Latino USA about an epidemic of rape of Honduran women by the Honduran police, and it just boiled my blood. And I immediately emailed the embassy of Honduras and told them that I wouldn't travel there, and I would urge all my friends to not travel there until somebody was held accountable for what they were doing. So
excellent.
It's not just avoiding the country, but letting them know why. And then I also wanted to comment very quickly on the idea of anti-Semitism. My son is an Orthodox Jew, and he traveled through Europe wearing a kippah, you know, a yarmulke and tzitzit, you know, in other words, just putting a target on his back, essentially saying, I'm a Jew, how are you going to respond? And he went to Morocco and had people throw rocks at him and yell, Juif, Juif. And he went to Greece and had people not wait on him. And then finally he went to Spain where he was well-treated, but when he went to go to the synagogue, you had to press an intercom system and tell them why you were there and who you were before they would even allow you in. So there's a lot of...
Well, Spain has just gone public with the fact that they're actually encouraging Jews to come back after they were barred since 1492.
Uh-huh. Yes, you can come home now. But in any case, they wouldn't. He tried speaking in English, saying, "I want to come up and daven, you know, pray with you," and they wouldn't open the door. And he tried it in Spanish, you know, "I'd like to come upstairs and, you know, pray with you," and they wouldn't open the door. And finally, he said it in Hebrew, and they opened the door. So there's some fear there, and I guess I've said enough.
Yeah, well, you've said it very succinctly and well, and thank you, Claudia, for that call. Mm-hmm. I want to get one quick call on here from Mississippi, from Biloxi. Scott, hi.
Hi, everybody.
Yes,
I just wanted to make a point that everyone needs to just go out and embrace any country. It doesn't matter their track record, because if you go there, you might come back and be a passionate spokesperson for them and give the voice to the voiceless. And bring a smile, leave a smile. If you go there with compassion, you're not doing, I don't see that you're doing any harm anywhere you go.
Amen.
And the one other thing on the environmental side of the world, wherever I bring batteries because they're a toxic substance, I bring them back to America. I travel for 1 to 3 to 6 months at a time, and I, you know, try only to leave a smile and not leave pollution. And I always travel with a water filter, because you have to.
Well, Chris, also good advice, and we thank you. I'm thinking about some people won't travel to Mississippi, like that woman before won't travel to anti-Semitic countries because of Mississippi's history in terms of race. But gay-friendly destinations, Chris wants to know. What countries would you spotlight real quick, because we're almost out of time here?
I think we found that Cape Verde actually has no criminalization of homosexuality, which is rare for an African country.
Uruguay
was definitely
very, very
the best performer in Latin America.
Okay, and you said Cape Verde. Is it Cape Verde or Cape Verde? Well, we'll keep to
probe. They all work.
Thank you all for being here. Good hour. Jeff Greenwald, Malia Everett, Christy Hoover. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.